I have publicly appealed to our brethren in behalf of an institution to be established among us, and have spoken in the highest terms of Dr. F. as the man who has, in the providence of God, obtained an experience to act a part as physician. This I have said upon the authority of what God has shown me. If necessary, I would unhesitatingly repeat all that I have said. I have no desire to withdraw one sentence that I have written or spoken. The work is of God and must be prosecuted with a firm yet cautious hand. The health reform is closely connected with the work of the third message, yet it is not the message. Our preachers should teach the health reform, yet they should not make this the leading theme in the place of the message. Its place is among those subjects which set forth the preparatory work to meet the events brought to view by the message. Among these, it is prominent. We should take hold of every reform with zeal, yet should avoid giving the impression that we are vacillating and subject to fanaticism. Our people should furnish means to meet the wants of a growing health institute among us, as they are able to do without giving less for the other wants of the cause. Let the health reform and the health institute grow up among us as other worthy enterprises have grown, taking into the account our feeble strength in the past and our greater ability to do much in a short period of time now. Let the health institute grow as other interests among us have grown, as fast as it can safely and not cripple other branches of the great work which are of equal or greater importance at this time. For a brother to put a large share of his property, whether he has much or little, into the institute, so as to be unable to do as much in other directions as he otherwise should, would be wrong. And for him to do nothing would be as great a wrong. With every stirring appeal to our people for means to put into the institute, there should have been a caution not to rob other branches of the work, especially should the liberal poor have been cautioned. Some feeble poor men with families without a home of their own, and too poor to go to the institute to be treated, have put from one-fifth to one-third of all they possess into the institute. This is wrong. Some brethren and sisters have several shares when they should not have one, and should for a short time attend the institute, having their expenses paid, wholly or in part, from the charity fund. I do not see the wisdom of making great calculations for the future and letting those suffer who need help now. Move no faster, brethren, than the unmistakable providence of God opens the way before you. The health reform is a branch of the special work of God for the benefit of His people. I saw that in an institution established among us, the greatest danger would be of its managers departing from the spirit of the present truth. And from that simplicity which should ever characterize the disciples of Christ. A warning was given me against lowering the standard of truth in any way in such an institution, in order to help the feelings of unbelievers and thus secure their patronage. The great object of receiving unbelievers into the institution is to lead them to embrace the truth. If the standard be lowered, they will get the impression that the truth is of little importance, and they will go away in a state of mind harder of access than before. But the greatest evil resulting from such a course would be its influence upon the poor, afflicted, believing patients, which would affect the cause generally. They have been taught to trust in the prayer of faith, and many of them are bowed down in spirit because prayer is not now more fully answered. I saw that the reason why God did not hear the prayers of His servants for the sick among us more fully was that He could not be glorified in so doing while they were violating the laws of health. And I also saw that he designed the Health Reform and Health Institute to prepare the way for the prayer of faith to be fully answered. Faith and good works should go hand in hand in relieving the afflicted among us and in fitting them to glorify God here and to be saved at the coming of Christ. God forbid that these afflicted ones should ever be disappointed and grieved in finding the managers of the Institute working only from a worldly standpoint, instead of adding to the hygienic practice the blessings and virtues of nursing fathers and mothers in Israel. Let no one obtain the idea that the Institute is the place for them to come to be raised up by the prayer of faith. That is the place to find relief from disease by treatment and right habits of living, and to learn how to avoid sickness. But if there is one place under the heavens more than another where soothing, sympathizing prayer should be offered by men and women of devotion and faith, it is at such an institute. Those who treat the sick should move forward in their important work with strong reliance upon God for His blessing to attend the means which He has graciously provided and to which He has in mercy called our attention as a people, such as pure air, cleanliness, healthful diet, proper periods of labor and repose, and the use of water. They should have no selfish interest outside of this important and solemn work. To care properly for the physical and spiritual interests of the afflicted people of God who have reposed almost unlimited confidence in them and have at great expense placed themselves under their care will require their undivided attention. No one has so great a mind or is so skillful, but that the work will be imperfect after he has done his very best. Let those to whom are committed the physical and also, to a great extent, the spiritual interests of the afflicted people of God beware how they, through worldly policy or personal interest or a desire to be engaged in a great and popular work, call down upon themselves and this branch of the cause the frown of God. They should not depend upon their skill alone. If the blessing, instead of the frown, of God be upon the institution, angels will attend patients, helpers, and physicians to assist in the work of restoration, so that in the end the glory will be given to God and not to feeble, short-sighted man. Should these men work from a worldly policy, and should their hearts be lifted up and they feel to say, "My power and the might of my hand hath done this," God would leave them to work under the great disadvantages of their inferiority to other institutions in knowledge, experience, and facilities. They could not then accomplish half as much as other institutions do. I saw the beneficial influence of outdoor labor upon those of feeble vitality and depressed circulation, especially upon women who have induced these conditions by too much confinement indoors. Their blood has become impure for want of fresh air and exercise. Instead of amusements to keep these persons indoors, care should be taken to provide outdoor attractions. I saw there should be connected with the Institute ample grounds, beautified with flowers and planted with vegetables and fruits. Here the feeble could find work appropriate to their sex and condition at suitable hours. These grounds should be under the care of an experienced gardener to direct all in a tasteful, orderly manner. The relation which I sustain to this work demands of me an unfettered expression of my views. I speak freely and choose this medium to speak to all interested. What appeared in testimony number 11 concerning the Health Institute should not have been given until I was able to write out all I had seen in regard to it. I intended to say nothing upon the subject in number 11, and sent all the manuscript that I designed for that testimony from Ottawa County, where I was then laboring, to the office at Battle Creek, stating that I wished them to hasten out that little work as it was much needed, and as soon as possible I would write number 12, in which I designed to speak freely and fully concerning the Institute. The brethren at Battle Creek, who were especially interested in the Institute, knew I had seen that our people should contribute of their means to establish such an institution. They therefore wrote to me that the influence of my testimony in regard to the Institute was needed immediately to move the brethren upon the subject, and that the publication of number 11 would be delayed till I could write. This was a great trial to me, as I knew I could not write out all I had seen, for I was then speaking to the people 6 or 8 times a week, visiting from house to house, and writing hundreds of pages of personal testimonies and private letters. This amount of labor, with unnecessary burdens and trials thrown upon me, unfitted me for labor of any kind. My health was poor, and my mental sufferings were beyond description. Under these circumstances, I yielded my judgment to that of others, and wrote what appeared in number 11 in regard to the Health Institute, being unable then to give all I had seen. In this, I did wrong. I must be allowed to know my own duty better than others can know it for me, especially concerning matters which God has revealed to me. I shall be blamed by some for speaking as I now speak. Others will blame me for not speaking before. The disposition manifested to crowd the matter of the Institute so fast has been one of my heaviest trials I have ever borne. If all who have used my testimony to move the brethren had been equally moved by it themselves, I should be better satisfied. Should I delay longer to speak my views and feelings, I should be blamed the more both by those who think I should have spoken sooner and by those also who may think I should not give any cautions. For the good of those at the head of the work, for the good of the cause and the brethren, and to save myself great trials, I have freely spoken.
Chapter 15, Health and Religion.
Here there is a small footnote that says, "This and the following article are extracts from letters which I addressed to those at the head of the Health Institute, the first one, the 1st of May, 1867, and the second, in June following," signed Ellen G. White. God would have a health institution established which will, in its influence, be closely connected with the closing work for mortals fitting for immortality, one that will have no tendency to weaken the religious principles of old or young, and which will not improve the health of the body to the detriment of spiritual growth. The great object of this institution should be to improve the health of the body, that the afflicted may more highly appreciate eternal things. If this object is not continually set before the mind and efforts are not made to this end, it will prove a curse instead of a blessing. I saw that the high standard should not be lowered in the least in order that the institution may be patronized by unbelievers. If unbelievers choose to come while its conductors occupy the exalted spiritual position which God designs they should, there will be a power that will affect their hearts. With God and angels on their side, His commandment-keeping people can but prosper. This institution is not to be established for the object of gain, but to aid in bringing God's people into such a condition of physical and mental health as will enable them to rightly appreciate eternal things, and to correctly value the redemption so dearly purchased by the sufferings of our Savior. This institution is not to be made a place for diversion or amusement. Those who cannot live unless they have excitement and diversion will be of no use to the world. None are made better for their living. They might just as well be out of the world as to be in it. I saw that the view that spirituality is a detriment to health, which Dr. E. sought to instill into the minds of others, is but the sophistry of the devil. Satan found his way into Eden and made Eve believe that she needed something more than that which God had given her for happiness, that the forbidden fruit would have a special exhilarating influence upon her body and mind, and would exalt her even to be equal with God in knowledge. But the knowledge and benefit she thought to gain proved to her a terrible curse. There are persons with a diseased imagination to whom religion is a tyrant, ruling them as with a rod of iron. Such are constantly mourning over their depravity and groaning over supposed evil. Love does not exist in their hearts. A frown is ever upon their countenances. They are chilled by the innocent laugh from the youth or from anyone. They consider all recreation or amusement a sin, and think that the mind must be constantly wrought up to just such a stern, severe pitch. This is one extreme. Others think that the mind must ever be on the stretch to invent new amusements and diversions in order to gain health. They learn to depend on excitement and are uneasy without it. Such are not true Christians. They go to another extreme. The true principles of Christianity open before all a source of happiness, the height and depth, the length and breadth of which are immeasurable. It is Christ in us, a well of water springing up into everlasting life. It is a continual wellspring from which the Christian can drink at will and never exhaust the fountain. That which brings sickness of body and mind to nearly all is dissatisfied feelings and discontented repinings. They have not God. They have not the hope which reaches to that within the veil, which is as an anchor to the soul both sure and steadfast. All who possess this hope will purify themselves even as He is pure. Such are free from restless longings, repinings, and discontent. They are not continually looking for evil and brooding over borrowed trouble. But we see many who are having a time of trouble beforehand. Anxiety is stamped upon every feature. They seem to find no consolation, but have a continual fearful looking for of some dreadful evil. Such dishonor God and bring the religion of Christ into disrepute. They have not true love for God nor for their companions and children. Their affections have become morbid. But vain amusements will never correct the minds of such. They need the transforming influence of the Spirit of God in order to be happy. They need to be benefited by the mediation of Christ in order to realize consolation, divine and substantial. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. Those who have an experimental knowledge of this scripture are truly happy. They consider the approbation of heaven of more worth than any earthly amusement. Christ in them, the hope of glory, will be health to the body and strength to the soul. The simplicity of the gospel is fast disappearing from professed Sabbath keepers. I inquire 100 times a day, how can God prosper us? There is but little praying. In fact, prayer is almost obsolete. Few are willing to bear the cross of Christ who bore the shameful cross for us. I cannot feel that things are moving at the Institute as God would have them move. I fear that He will turn His face from it. I was shown that physicians and helpers should be of the highest order, those who have an experimental knowledge of the truth, who will command respect and whose word can be relied on. They should be persons who have not a diseased imagination, persons who have perfect self-control, who are not fitful or changeable, who are free from jealousy and evil surmising, persons who have a power of will that will not yield to slight indispositions, who are unprejudiced, who will think no evil, who think and move calmly, considerately, having the glory of God and the good of others ever before them. Never should one be exalted to a responsible position merely because he desires it. Those only should be chosen who are qualified for the position. Those who are to bear responsibilities should first be proved and give evidence that they are free from jealousy, that they will not take a dislike to this or that one, while they have a few favored friends and take no notice of others. God grant that all may move just right in that institution.
Chapter 16. Work and Amusements.
Dear Brother F., my mind has been considerably exercised upon one or two points. When I get where I am writing letters to you night after night in my sleep, I then think it time to carry out my convictions of duty. When I was shown that Dr. E. erred in some things in regard to the instructions he gave his patients, I saw that you had received the same ideas in many things, and that the time would come when you would see correctly in regard to the matter. These are concerning work and amusements. I was shown that it would prove more beneficial to most patients to allow light work, and even to urge it upon them, than to urge them to remain inactive and idle. If the power of the will be kept active to arouse the dormant faculties, it will be the greatest help to recover health. Remove all labor from those who have been overtaxed all their lives, and in 9 cases out of 10, the change will be an injury. This has proved true in the case of my husband. I was shown that physical outdoor exercise is far preferable to indoor. But if this cannot be secured, light indoor employment would occupy and divert the mind, and prevent it from dwelling upon symptoms and little ailments, and would also prevent homesickness. This do-nothing system, I saw, had been the greatest curse to your wife and my husband. God gave employment to the first pair in Eden because he knew they would be happier when employed. From what has been shown me, this do-nothing system is a curse to soul and body. Light employment will not excite or tax the mind or strength any more than amusements. The sick often get where they look at their poor feelings and think themselves utterly unable to do anything, when, if they would arouse the will and compel themselves to do an amount of physical labor every day, they would be far happier and improve much faster. I shall write more fully upon this point hereafter. Here there is a short statement written by Ellen G. White as a note to the first edition, which says, I understand from a recent Rochester paper that card playing is no longer practiced as an amusement at the institution in blank.